from KQED.
Welcome back to this morning's Forum program. I'm Michael Krasny. According to the Lifting Children and Families Out of Poverty Task Force, 1 in 5 children in California lives below the federal poverty line. In a new report, the task force provides a detailed plan for how to end extreme childhood poverty, advocating for increased social services, guaranteed child care, and universal preschool, and a targeted child tax credit. The plan comes out weeks before Governor-elect Gavin Newsom prepares to release his first budget to the state legislature in January. And today we're going to discuss the state of child poverty in California and the details and challenges of this new proposed plan. Let me tell you who is joining us for the segment. Conway Collis joins us. He's co-chair of the State of California Lifting Children and Families Out of Poverty Task Force and also president and CEO of GRACE, which is an organization dedicated to reducing child poverty. Welcome, Conway Collis.
Good to be with you. Thank you, Michael.
Good to have you with us, and also good to have David Grusky. He's professor of sociology and directs Stanford Center on Poverty and Inequality, researcher on the task force's report, and co-author of The Fading American Dream. Welcome, David Grusky.
Thank you for inviting me.
Good to have you as well. And let me begin, Conway Collis, with you. This is really quite ambitious. We're going to spend $1.6 billion if it gets through the legislature, more on cutting child poverty, the assumption being that it can be cut in half. What about, let's talk about who's going to be affected and what specific ways they're going to be affected.
Well, Michael, again, thank you for having us on. California has the highest level of child poverty, the most children and families in poverty of any state in the country, almost 2 million children in the state, and 450,000 of those children in deep child poverty. And let's just to think about that just for a moment before we delve into the details. These are 450,000 individual children, hopes and dreams and fears and strengths and weaknesses. These are individuals, so just to take it out of the raw numbers. But if all of those 450 children were in one place, that would be the 8th largest city in California. That city would be bigger than Oakland. And the other thing that's important is that most of the children and families in deep child poverty in the state are either in the Bay Area or the Los Angeles area, because they tend to live in the areas of the highest cost of living. So this especially impacts the Bay Area. And what the task force has put together is a cost-effective database plan based on the best science that will literally, when fully implemented, end deep child poverty in California over 4 years and substantially reduce overall child poverty in the state.
Well, you've given us the figures of 2 million living below the poverty line and 450,000 in deep poverty. What's the distinction between living below the poverty line and living in deep poverty?
Well, deep poverty is considered living in under 50% of the federal poverty line, which means for a family of four, it's essentially under $12,500 a year for that family.
And we're talking about children who, in many instances, are without, can't afford clothes. They live on sometimes fixed incomes, but they can't find housing, and in many instances, really aren't eating as well.
That's exactly, and this allows us to help children get at least to a subsistence level where they have a place to live. It's not rat infested. They're not on the streets. They've got enough to eat, and they're in a position to learn. And I think that's really the key, because what we've done is to deal with the outcomes of child poverty, whether it's homelessness or addiction or healthcare costs, juvenile justice costs and crime and foster care. And we need to deal with, we have to deal with the results of it, but we also have to deal with it in a systemic way. And that's what this plan does. It allows us to help children get so at least they're in a position to learn, and then provide the foundational services in terms of child care and early childhood education so that children are progressing and able to turn into tax-paying adults. So this is something, I just want to emphasize this, that it obviously makes a human and moral sense, but it also makes the most profound fiscal sense for the state.
Yeah, in the report it talks about, just talking about success, and education, access to quality care from cradle to career. And the notion here is that we're saving a lot of money by helping children out of the kind of poverty that stigmatizes and keeps them back and makes them not advance.
That's exactly right. And what the research shows, and this was done, by the way, by economists, shows that if we reduce child poverty by 50% in the state, which we have the ability to do, this is a political decision, if we reduce child poverty by 50% in the state, that will have a minimum positive budget impact for the state of $12 billion a year, every year. And you just think about what the state can do with an extra $12 billion a year in terms of roads and infrastructure and all the rest of the services that we need in the state.
Talking to Conway Collis, he's co-chair of the State of California Lifting Children and Families Out of Poverty Task Force. And we should mention that this began as an assembly bill, 1520, sponsored by assembly member Autumn Burke, and then evolved to a great extent into this task force through a Christian charity, which I mentioned before, Grace. But let me go to David Grusky. David Grusky, you're a professor of sociology, and so I know that economics is not necessarily in your wheelhouse here, but the report talks about hard evidence here, specific evidence that backs up not only the cost savings, but the money that would accrue back to the state. Can you outline for us why this is being pretty much presented to the people as being actually hard evidence, specific evidence?
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. And again, thank you for inviting me to this program. I think the backdrop here that we have to bear in mind is that we now know that children who are born into poverty are much more likely, when they become adults, to be in poverty themselves. And you might say, well, why is that? And the answer, and again, this is based on high-quality evidence, is a simple one, but an important one. It's that money matters. We've, in effect, put opportunity on the market, and parents who are in poverty can't buy what's necessary to ensure that their children aren't in poverty. They can't afford the high-quality child care that we know reduces their children's risk of being in poverty when they grow up. They can't afford the high-quality early childhood education that we know reduces their children's risk of being in poverty when they grow up. And they can't afford to live in the high-crime, high-amenity neighborhoods that we know reduces their children's risk of being in poverty when they grow up. So, in effect, we've put opportunity on the market. It's for sale. And low-income parents don't have the money to buy it for their children. So what we've done on this task force is to identify how we can fix that problem. There's basically two ways. You can deliver money to low-income families so that they can then buy opportunity for their children, and we've identified places where providing money of that sort will have precisely that effect. And you can also provide basic services to them, services that we know, again, will provide opportunities for their children. So the task force worked hard on the evidence showing that money matters, and they either deliver that money directly to the families that need it, or they deliver the services that can be a replacement for that money.
As long as we're talking about money, can you talk about the targeted child tax credit that's built into this report?
Absolutely. This is a very important part of the set of recommendations that came out of the task force. It again builds out of this evidence that money matters. We know that you need money in order to buy opportunity for your children. And sometimes the best way to solve that problem is to deliver that money directly to families that are in deep poverty that have children. And so we have developed a targeted child tax credit that will deliver money to those families that are most directly and immediately in need. And we know, again, based on the evidence, that that money will in the main be used to, in effect, buy opportunity for their children.
Now, how does that work, essentially? I mean, the tax credit.
So we take into account all the income that a family has, and if it falls below the deep poverty threshold and the family has children, we will then provide a targeted tax credit. Think of it as the earned income tax credit, but now it's a tax credit that supplements the income of families in deep poverty that have children. We'll provide that tax credit that will allow them, again, to help support their children.
Let me do this. We're talking about a report that was released that really plans and aspires to cutting child poverty, deep child poverty, but child poverty in general in half. And There's a good deal of money in this, obviously. We've been talking about the money. $1.6 billion would be spent next year, and over the course of a number of years, the ideal is to actually cut child poverty in half, affecting about 1.9 million children a year. If you have some thoughts, if you have some questions, we'd like to hear from you now. You can join us at our toll-free number, and we invite you to do that. The number to call, 866-733-6786. Questions about the task force report or about how it's going to be implemented or essentially thoughts you might have in reaction to it. It's obviously a pervasive and a terrible problem, and we can help children's health. We can help them get out of poverty. We can help their cognitive development. There's so much that can be done and that needs to be done. And we're also talking about not only one in five in the state who are in this situation below the poverty level, but 30% of them are African Americans and Latinos, and over 20% are in families. Let's hear your thoughts and any questions you have. And again, you can join us 866-733-6786. You can also email us and join us that way, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website. Post your questions or comments there at kqed.org/forum. Simply click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle's @KQED Forum. And you can also, of course, put questions or comments on our Facebook page. We have Conway Collis with us, co-chair of the State of California Lifting Children and Families Out of Poverty Task Force, and David Grusky, who is professor of sociology and director of the Stanford Center on Poverty and Inequality, researcher on the task force's report. And before we go to calls and emails, Conway Collis, I was talking about how this evolved from Grace to an assembly bill and so forth. Can you tell us a little bit more about Grace, because essentially a philanthropic Christian organization, yes?
We are. We're a faith-based Catholic organization, and Grace stands for Gather, Respect, Advocate, Change, and Engage. And that's exactly what we've done. And it's really built to include a very broad range of organizations throughout California. Yesterday's press conference announcing the implementation of the legislative implementation of the task force recommendations, we had over 30 organizations represented. It was really quite extraordinary, and it was we led the press conference off by. A reflection by we had two ministers, Sister Julie Kubisak, who's the provincial superior of the Daughters of Charity, who are the sponsors of Grace. We had two rabbis, and so what was so interesting, I think, was to have this obviously based in coming out of the faith-based community, but also including, for example, three prominent business leaders. Talking about the importance of these proposals in terms of the state's economy and the fiscal health of the state. And so this is really coming out of the faith-based community is really now, I think, including a broad range of Californians. So I think that, and I think that with...
Yeah, but forgive me, you want to get this past California. This is being set up as a national model in many ways, isn't it, with other faith-based communities throughout the country?
It is, and we did, yesterday's press conference was done in partnership with the Poor People's Campaign, which is a national organization calling for a moral revival. It was started originally by Dr. Martin Luther King. I think that with Governor-elect Newsom's election, I think that the elements of real change are coming together, because what's happened in the past is that California's one year will emphasize child care, another year will emphasize, perhaps earned income tax credit.
The single issues.
Yeah, single issues, as opposed to looking at this as in a comprehensive, coordinated, data-based way. And so really what the task force has provided is a roadmap to get from here to there. So I think that with Governor-elect Newsom's election, with now what the task force has provided in terms of a roadmap to get from here to there, and I think with Californians, I think, increasing awareness and focus on the fact that in a state, the Golden State, the fifth largest economy in the world, we just can't have a fifth of our children left behind. And so I think that's changing. And Californians have traditionally been very aware of the existential threat of climate change. And Jerry Brown has been terrific on that issue. And California's consequently been a world leader. I think that there's traditionally been less awareness of the systemic impact of child and family poverty, and that we have to break it.
Well, Governor-elect Newsom has made it very clear that he has a lot of sympathies there, and I know you're hopeful that the new budget will move this task force report forward in terms of the revenue. But let me, we got a lot of callers. I want to get to as many as we can, but let me just, David Gruske, Professor Gruske, go back to you with a quick question here, because something caught my eye in the report about strengthening families to prevent referrals to foster care. That's a big and remarkable part of this picture.
That's right. I mean, it's part of the overall payoff to this type of program is that it's going to reduce downstream the demand for services. So we've shown, for example, that with the cash and near cash expenditures that are laid out in the task force plan, which would on average for a child living in poverty add up to about $36,000 over the first 18 years of life, we've shown that that parlays into an additional lifetime income when those children grow up of about $435,000. What does that mean? That means that the demand on services for all children, including foster children, demand on services in downstream will be much lower. And that's part of the big fiscal savings that Conway was discussing. And so it's not just a moral case. We ought to emphasize that it is that, and it's very important. It's a travesty that we're allowing our children to suffer in this way. But it's not just that moral case. It's also a fiscal case.
It brings up another question, though, if I may. And again, I want to go to our callers. But Anne wants to know, does the 450,000 children that is in deep poverty include the number of children in foster care and state-funded programs? David Gruske?
I'm going to defer to Conway on that one, because he is the expert on foster care.
Conway Callis?
Yeah, it includes some, and the overall number is that there are about 220,000 families in deep poverty in California, and just to talk about them for a moment, because this is crucial. About half of them are working, sometimes in multiple jobs. They're just not making enough to get out of deep poverty, and they tend to live in the Bay Area, or perhaps in Los Angeles, but in the almost all of them live in the high cost areas, and many of them include a family member, either the parent or child, with a disability that's preventing them from working. But all of them are facing the obstacles to work in terms of unstable housing and unstable child care, and that's really what this proposal, the overall proposal, really just does three things, if I could mention them. The first is it provides the basic level of income that people need to be at least in a subsistence level, if they're not living on the street, enough to eat, and the children are in a situation where they can learn. Second, it provides the foundational learning opportunities in terms of child care and early childhood education that is the evidence is simply overwhelming in terms of its importance. And finally, it coordinates the care from the very beginning so that a parent is getting prenatal care and the early infant care with perhaps the wraparound services that people need that help keep families together and the children out of foster care.
All right, let me get to our callers.
The best foster care program.
We've got a lot of callers. I want to get to as many of you as I can. And we begin with Asa from Livermore. Is it Asa or Asa? I'm sorry.
Asa.
Asa, go ahead. Welcome.
Yeah, so thanks for having me. And the question I had was more or less, how does this policy or law apply to the concept of the benefit cliff, in where a user or an individual will have a benefit, but then all of a sudden they make $1 more than the tax credit or gives them, and that entire benefit is taken away? Is it a phased approach where it will slowly phase out to 50%, 75%, 25%, or is it completely taken away for those individuals who are working their way out of poverty?
Yes, good question, Asa. Thank you for it, Asa, excuse me. And Conway Callis.
Yep, I'm going to actually ask David to answer that, because he has done an extraordinary amount of work in being sure that the various programs are coordinated with one another and we avoid the cliff.
Well, he just deferred to you, and now you can defer to him.
Yeah.
Go ahead, David Gruske.
Yeah, happy to take on that very important question. And as Conway noted, we were very cognizant of the evidence that shows you do not want to build safety net programs that have disincentives, disincentives of the sort that, say, would deter someone from employment or earnings. And so we made sure that there was an earned income disregard built into the targeted child tax credit that meant that if you go ahead and earn more, that's not going to harm you. Likewise, we have an EITC benefit disregard that makes sure that you won't lose your EITC benefits. And that means then that the child tax credit, the targeted child tax credit, will actually take some families beyond the threshold of deep child poverty because we want to have those disregards, as it were, for earned income and for your EITC benefits.
All right, let me go to another caller, and that's Jennifer, who's joining us from Granite Bay. Jennifer, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I work in education, and my question is that we seem to have really good early intervention services available to families, and I have experienced situations where the parent refuses to utilize. And I guess I'm wondering, is there any sort of mechanism in the plan to address the fact that there are just certain families who, for whatever different reasons, are not wanting to access those services?
Jennifer, that's a
this is Conway College.
That's a really important question. And these programs are voluntary, and it's important that they are voluntary, I think, so that these are remain decisions that a parent and family makes. We do have mechanisms to try to make parents feel comfortable with the acceptance of services and benefits. And that's an important aspect. And when I said that when fully implemented, the plan would end deep child poverty in the state, that's meant to say that there is going to be a process of, for some families and some parents, persuading them to accept some of the services that are available. And this is particularly important, not so much with child care and early childhood education. People tend to want to take advantage of that. But a parent may need early treatment for alcohol or drug abuse or those kind of things. And the acceptance of those services is part of what's necessary to keep a family together and children out of foster care.
Conway, excuse me, does this really highlight the necessity or importance of coordinating services throughout the state?
You bet. And there are relatively new programs and called home visiting programs where you make sure that a family is able to take advantage of prenatal care and early medical care and wraparound services. But part of the way that folks are comfortable with that is that their own neighbors and people that they trust are reaching out to them rather than a stranger. And so it's been proven that when neighbors and friends are engaged in helping to reach out, that people tend to feel much more comfortable with accepting services.
Let me thank the caller and go to a question from a listener named Marillo, who asks, if housing takes 70% or more of low-income household income, how can this plan house people where there are no affordable homes? Professor Grosky? Go ahead, Conway Collins. Yeah.
Well, I think there are two answers to that. The first is that we've talked about the targeted child tax credit, and that takes into account the cost of housing in a particular area. And that's one critical aspect of it, is that that's specifically designed to do that. So, for example, in the Bay Area, where the cost of housing is so high, that's an especially critical aspect of the proposal. But the fact is that we're 3.5 million housing units short in California. And so addressing the housing crisis is the Governor-elect Newsom, San Francisco State Senator Scott Wiener have emphasized, is really crucial. And so we have to get away from doing one thing. We need to take a comprehensive approach, and the provision of additional housing is one of them.
And again, Conway Collins is co-chair of the State of California Lifting Children and Families Out of Poverty Task Force. Let's lift another call in here from San Joaquin, and that's Tyrance. Good morning.
guys doing? Can you hear me?
Yeah, can hear you okay. Go ahead.
Yes, my name is Tyrant Kelly. I'm considered a reverse psychologist. And my question was, how do we focus on poverty and the underserved and the people of color community without first focusing on the trauma, the lack of educational resources, and the fact that they're dealing with their families being a correction?
Who wants to go here? David Grusky, I go to you now.
Sure. I think one aspect that follows up on Conway's comment about coordinated services is that we're very committed to creating a one-stop process that ensures that everyone who's eligible for a benefit or service can access it. So families in poverty already face difficult and complicated lives, say when they're released from being incarcerated, but they're also being evicted all the time, they're losing jobs, their cars are breaking down, and on and on. And we want them to spend their time on training, working, caring for their children, and not applying for benefits. The take-up rates for many of our programs are just not high enough, and it's often because families are just too stressed to apply.
And yeah, so but the caller mentioned trauma, and, you know, in these communities of color, there's often trauma to deal with in terms of poverty as well, isn't there?
Yeah, and so we're part of the California poverty measure on which this targeted child tax credit will be based takes into account the poverty rates that prevail and the cost of living that prevails in a particular community. So we'll have places where there's lots of need. There's going to be more targeted child tax credit going to those communities and those people. So that's part of the answer, but it's by no means a full and complete answer.
Well, we have the report online, and you can access it on our website, kqed.org, and we hope that this will be brought to fruition, and even all the ambitions of not only get it through the budget system and the legislature, but also on to a national model. Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us, and thank you for the work you've done here. It's important.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Yeah, thank you.
Conway Collis, again, is co-chair of the State of California Lifting Children and Families Out of Poverty Task Force, and David Grusky is professor of sociology and director of the Stanford Center on Poverty and Inequality and a researcher on the task force's report. Another hour of forums up ahead. Stay tuned for that. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. An hour is repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. And in the hour ahead, we're going to talk to Francis Fukuyama, Stanford professor, all about his new book about identity politics and how it's affected the world we're living in today. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.